Good morning and welcome to the Health Matters Radio Show. It's Monday, it's the 13th of May. It's been a great weekend, weather-wise in Kent certainly, and I hope you all had a great weekend and you are fighting fit for the week ahead. So on today's show, we are going to be talking about the dangers of visceral, or commonly known abdominal fat, in a moment. But also towards the end of the show, we're going to be talking about the benefits of being properly hydrated and the importance of water. We all know that we should drink water, and without water we would die, but actually it does more than just quench our thirst. And in about 20 minutes we're going to be talking to our special guest of this morning, and today we have Jen Connolly from Soul Fertility. Good morning, Jen.
Good morning.
It's great to have you on the show this morning.
Thank you.
And we'll be finding out more about what Jen does in about 20 minutes. And Jen is a holistic reflexologist that specialises in fertility. So I'm looking forward to talking to Jen in about 20 minutes or so. So a quick disclaimer before we kick the show off. The purpose of the Health Matters radio show is to provide you with competent information on the subject matters that we cover, and to help educate and inform you in ways that you might be able to improve your own health. However, this is on the understanding that I'm not engaged in providing medical advice, and the content of the show should not be treated as a substitute for such. If you have any concerns about your general health, or you require medical or other expert assistance, please speak to a suitably qualified healthcare professional, which in many cases can be obtained by dialing 111, or speaking with your local pharmacist first. All the content is provided for general information only, and I encourage you to do your own research. And the show is based on my knowledge, my research, my experience, and offer my opinion, and I disclaim any liability that is incurred from the application of or the use of the content of the show. So a quick reminder of the show's social media feed on Twitter. If you search at Health Radio Show, you can follow the show's Twitter feed and be kept up to date, and you can drop me tweets. On Facebook, you can search the Health Matters Radio Show. You can like the show's Facebook page and again be kept up to date on Facebook. You'll be able to listen again to this show and all previous 60 shows on the media page of my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. And you can also, if you've got an Apple device, you can listen to this show on the show's iTunes podcast. Again, just search the Health Matters Radio Show, and all the previous shows are there too. And as always, if you'd like to contact me personally and away from social media, perhaps it's an issue you've got individually, then you can do so through my website. Go to the Contact Me page and drop me an email and I will come back to you. So on to the topic of visceral fat. Now, there are two types of fat in the human body. One is visceral and the other is subcutaneous. Now, subcutaneous essentially is your wobbly bits. So it might be the slight overhang on your jeans, or it might be, perhaps you put on a bit of weight and that, your rings on your fingers are coming, they're starting to get harder to remove. But actually, subcutaneous fat is not tremendously dangerous to your health. You might want to get rid of it. Most of us are carrying around a little bit more than we would like. But the really dangerous fat is the fat that we can't see, and that's the fat that sits in the body cavity. So this is called abdominal fat or visceral fat, and this is fat that's stored around our internal organs. So particularly around the liver, particularly around the pancreas, obviously around the heart, and around the intestines as well. And visceral fat is sometimes referred to as active fat, and it's active because it does play a role in our overall health. And also it affects the way that our hormones function. So most of us will have a certain amount of visceral fat. Some will be quite low, but people that are generally overweight will generally have higher levels of visceral fat. And the danger with too much visceral fat is it can lead on to things like type 2 diabetes. It can contribute to heart disease. It can. There is research that has suggested that excess visceral fat has an influence on things like breast cancer and colorectal cancer. And also, there is some really good new research at the moment that has shown the link between visceral fat and Alzheimer's disease. And as I mentioned on the last show, there is a link between type 2 diabetes and Alzheimer's as well. And you can see how all these things start to become intertwined and sort of interlocked with each other. But the interesting thing is that whilst these fat cells are sitting around the organs, we're putting lots of toxins into our fat cells, and that, those are environmental toxins. Those are toxins from the food that we eat, and it's been suggested that these fat cells around the abdominal cavity release especially large amounts of fatty acids, and these in turn can wreak havoc with our blood sugar and our insulin metabolism as well, which is obviously then the link to type 2 diabetes. So if you're carrying a lot of subcutaneous fat, it's a good idea to lose it anyway, because excess weight is excess weight, and excess weight puts a lot of pressure on the joints. But if you're actually starting to develop fat around the belly in particular, that can be a sign of too much fat in the abdominal cavity. So if you've got love handles, you know, most of us have got love handles, it's not a massive issue. You might want to lose them from a vanity point of view. But actually, you know, your love handles are not going to do a lot of damage to your health. But it's the fat around your organs that is obviously going to cause you the problem. So when we come into things like visceral fat and insulin resistance, one thing is sure. People that have got large bellies do tend to lose sensitivity to insulin. And insulin is a crucial hormone that helps the body to burn and metabolize energy. And when insulin loses its power to do its job properly, what the body does is it responds by pumping out more of that particular hormone, which then throws your system completely out of balance. And then when your pancreas is now pumping out more insulin, then that leads to an increase in fat. And the increase in fat leads to more insulin resistance, and more insulin resistance leads to the pancreas working harder, and the whole cycle continues. But if that's allowed to continue too long, you can have this condition called insulin resistance, commonly known as also metabolic syndrome. And that is obviously the precursor to things like type 2 diabetes, which can lead on to things like high blood pressure, too much bad cholesterol, and also heart disease as well. So you can see here that visceral fat, the fat we can't see, is the fat that does the most damage to our health. So how can you tell if you're carrying too much visceral fat? Now, generally, if you've got a big belly, generally speaking, it will mean that you're carrying fat around the organs. You can also be of a good size, but have a little pouch. Particularly men will get a little bulge around the belly. They won't be obese necessarily. They won't be carrying too much subcutaneous fat, but they might have this little pouch around their belly, and that can be an indicator that they're storing fat around the abdominal cavity or in the abdominal cavity. So the only way to tell for sure whether you're carrying too much visceral fat is to have an MRI scan. Now, if you went to your doctor and said, I'd like an MRI scan just to see if I've got too much visceral fat, they would probably laugh you out of the surgery. So for most of us, if our visceral fat is picked up on an MRI scan, it will generally be as a result of a test for something else. As far as I know, the NHS is not doing tests, MRI scans to check out visceral fat. So what else can we do? Well, look at that. You know, if we look at ourselves in the mirror and we can see that we're carrying too much belly fat, so fat around the mid, around the belly button, then generally that's an indicator that we're carrying too much visceral fat. But you can grab a tape measure. So if you grab a tape measure, if you exhale, relax, and wrap the tape measure around your stomach, then the bottom of the tape should be exactly even with the top of your hip bones. So if your belly is bigger than your hip circumference, then that can be an indicator that you're carrying too much fat in the abdominal cavity. Also, if you're a man and you have a waist circumference of more than 40 inches, or you're a woman with a waist circumference of more than 35 inches, statistically, you are at higher risk of developing things like heart disease and other diseases, but it can be an indicator of too much abdominal fat. And when it comes to shape, this is quite an interesting one. When I was doing my research, I didn't really think about this. In their teens and their 20s, young women often gain weight and body fat around their legs and around their bums. But men tend to develop it around their bellies more, which is why actually when you look at men in their 20s and 30s and into their 40s, the heart disease levels for younger men are higher than the heart disease levels for women. But once women reach menopause, they tend to spread out in the middle. And this is when the level of heart disease for women catches up with the level of heart disease for men. So there is a big correlation between the levels of visceral fat, the size of your belly, and things like type 2 diabetes and heart disease. So what can you do about it? Okay, well, exercise is good. There's been a lot of research that has shown that people that have exercised have reduced their visceral, their abdominal fat down significantly over a period of 6 to 12 months. But also diet and lifestyle is important as well. You know, if you're eating a bad diet, you can't out-exercise a bad diet. Okay, so if you're eating junk food, you're eating lots of saturated fats, eating lots of sugary foods, but then you're doing half an hour a day on a treadmill, it's only going to have a limited benefit to you. So if you're going to exercise, you do need to sort out your diet at the same time. And don't be sedentary. You know, if you're sitting around watching TV, eating snack foods, whatever you might be doing, then take stock of your life, take stock of your diet, take stock of your lifestyle and start making some changes. It's never too late to make a change until it becomes too late. So whilst you've still got the time to do it, I encourage you to get your exercise sorted out and perhaps sort your diet out as well. And also stress comes into it. If you've got a really stressful lifestyle, perhaps a really stressful job, maybe a really stressful social and home life, stress can play a big part in the development of fat around the belly. And it's thought that when we're under stress, that the body produces hormones such as cortisol. So cortisol is a stress hormone. And it's thought that the body builds up fat around the belly so that these fat cells break down the cortisol to give the body a rest from the continued high levels of this stress hormone. So if you've got a stressful lifestyle, then perhaps stress management might be a way forwards as well. So just remember that you might not have the body of an Adonis. You might not be able to develop a washboard flat stomach. But by making some changes to your lifestyle and your diet and maybe your management of your stress, you can certainly have a healthier body and obviously reduce the risk of some of those illnesses that we spoke about earlier in this piece. So hopefully you found that interesting. If you'd like to contact me, then please do so. Drop me a line. If you've got concerns about things like visceral fat, abdominal fat, I have some machinery that can measure abdominal fat. Then obviously I can help you, and then we can take it from there. But hopefully you found that piece interesting. So after the break, we are going to go on to our guest interview with Jen. But to take us there, we have a song from the 80s, a classic from Men at Work, and it's Down Under.
Traveling in a freighter combi on a hippie trailhead full of zombies. I met a strange lady, she made me nervous. She took me in and gave me breakfast. And she said, do you come from a land down under? A women go and men wonder. Can't you hear the thunder? You better run, you better take cover. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Health Matters Radio Show with me, Neil De Silva. Quick reminder of the show's social media feeds. On Twitter, we are at Health Radio Show. On Facebook, search The Health Matters Radio Show and you can follow the show's Facebook page. You can listen again to this show and all previous shows on the media page of my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk, and also on iTunes podcast. Go to iTunes, search The Health Matters Radio Show, and you can also subscribe to the show's feed as well. So when I upload a new show each week, then you will be notified that a new show is available for you to listen to. And again, if you'd like to contact me, please do so via my website. Go to the contact me page, www.i-nutrition.co.uk. So a quick shout out for my good friend Victoria Sheridan. Victoria runs a couple of networking groups in Kent and they're really good, actually, really, really good, really productive. If you've not been to one before, then I highly recommend that you give them a go. The first one is the BizBuzz Network. The BizBuzz Network runs at the Red Libbits Golf and Country Club, postcode TN15 7HT. It's from 10 a.m. to 12 noon once a month. It's £3 to attend and there is free parking on site as well. It's a great location, actually. I went last month and it's a lovely location, the golf club. The next meeting is on Wednesday, the 12th of June. So if you'd like to find out more, go to Facebook, search the Biz, that's B-I-Z, Buzz, B-U-Z, BizBuzz Network, and you'll be able to find more details about the next networking event there. Victoria also runs the a women's business network, the Longfield Ladies Who Latte, which meet at the Green Man in Longfield, DA37AS. That meeting also runs from 10 a.m. in the morning to 12 noon. Again, £3 and also free parking. The next meeting is on Thursday, the 6th of June. So if you'd like to find out more, go to Facebook, look up Longfield Ladies Who Latte, get in touch with Victoria and book your space. So, okay, on to our special guest interview of the morning. As I mentioned, we have Jen Connolly from Soul Fertility, and Jen is a holistic reflexologist that specialises in fertility. So I'm very interested to find out more about what Jen does. And good morning, Jen. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
So we're going to find out more about what you do. But I think a good place to start with every guest is to find out a little bit more about their background and their journey and their story up to the point that they are doing what they do now. So perhaps you could tell us a little bit more about your background and if there's any sort of personal stories in there as well, perhaps you could tell us about those as well.
Cool, yeah. Basically, I come from a corporate environment, working for a payroll at one point in my life, to a PA to a security in a security firm. And before I actually left full-time work, I was a legal secretary in a very large law firm. Whilst I was there, I trained as a reflexologist and as a nutritionist and decided through health issues of my parents that I wanted to leave work and spend more time with them. So I did. That was about 19 years ago. From there, I've gone on to teach reflexology at our local college. And occasionally, I actually still see some of the students as they are still working in the reflexology field, which is wonderful.
So what was it? Because you know, it sounded like you had a pretty high power job, a very responsible job, arguably what many people would consider a career for life. Where did that change come? What was the point of what you thought? You thought, I don't really want to do this anymore.
It became very stressful at one point, especially when I was working for the bank. I was running a payroll and it was the payroll was actually being outsourced. So I realised that my job there was very limited. So I went on, that's when I started doing my training to become a reflexologist, which I started at night school.
Okay.
It was literally, I went and had two lessons at my local night school and I thought, oh my God, this is amazing. I want to train to do this properly. So I found somewhere in London and continued and did my year's training to become fully qualified.
So what was it about reflexology particularly that made you, or that attracted you to that particular field?
I think it was because it worked so instantly. I was quite amazed how quickly the effects can actually occur with regards to having a treatment. The effects for me were immediate.
Okay.
And I noticed a huge difference in my health and just generally how I was. And over the years, I've now started to see that in clients as well. The effects can be instant and they last for various timings. Depends on, everybody's an individual, obviously, yeah. So it depends how they react. But yeah, it works almost instantly.
So it sounds like in addition to this change in career path, there is a personal backstory there.
Yes. Well, I now specialise in fertility, which you mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is because I learned so much about my own health, going through certain fertility issues myself. I've been there, done it, miscarriages.
Really?
And IVF treatments. I've gone through pretty much the works. Mm. And I learned so much about my own body and what that went through with the hormones that I was putting into my body with regards to the IVF and what have you. Mm-hmm. And I then realised as I was teaching reflexology at the time that my students were working on me and they were it was actually having quite a profound effect on what the treatments were doing mm. with regards to sort of the effectiveness of the IVF as well. Mm. So unfortunately for me, it didn't work, but I learnt so much and I want to actually pass that on to people.
And I think I mentioned it before. I apologise because I do mention it quite a lot, but there is a theme to the guests that I have on my show. And it doesn't matter what they do, whether they do reflexology or they are personal trainer or whatever, there is a story that's taken them, their own personal story.
Yeah.
And I think it makes someone very authentic. Rather than just randomly picking a topic to study and then dealing with people with that particular issue, but never having gone through that themselves, I think when you've been through something, I think it certainly makes you very genuine and very congruent. But you can experience the. I mean, this is a very emotive subject. I'm sure if there's people out there that have fertility issues, this is incredibly emotional.
It can be, and I've often had clients sit in my chair, relaxing probably for the first time in a very long time, that just start crying. Because it works on many different levels. Reflexology works on the mind, the body, and the spiritual.
Okay.
So it works on every single level. And people, I think, are surprised at how emotional sometimes they can get over something very, very simple, really. Mm. A reflexology treatment is me playing with people's feet, for want of a better way of explaining it.
And I bet you've seen all shapes and sizes.
Oh, yes.
And so before we talk about how reflexology links into fertility, let's have a talk about reflexology itself. So for people that are perhaps not aware of what it is, perhaps you could explain a little bit more about how it works on the mind, the body and the spirit.
Okay, reflexology is actually a really lovely treatment. Obviously it works on the feet. It can actually work on the hands as well if you've got really sensitive feet. As some people do. And basically, different areas of the feet relate to different areas and organs within the body.
Okay.
And as a holistic treatment, it will work on, as we've said, the mind, the body, and the spirit. And by working on the feet, where all the nerve endings come down into the feet, so you're actually getting your body to work more efficiently, mm-hmm. and more effectively. It's an it's a balancing treatment and an unblocking treatment. So with regards to the fertility, it helps balance those hormones. Something obviously very important with regards to getting pregnant is regular cycles.
Mm.
And to do that, reflexology will help balance those hormones so that the cycle is regular. So you know when your fertility window is, which is always very tiny anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And it just helps in that sense.
And it is interesting because obviously on the previous piece we spoke about hormones, particularly,
yes.
you know, from my perspective and what I do, things like insulin, but
yep.
also cortisol, we spoke about stress.
Yep.
And, you know, I'm not an expert on fertility, but I can imagine that if stress levels are quite high,
yep.
and you can kind of see how things like cortisol will have an impact on fertility, but issues with fertility will also raise the levels of cortisol.
Exactly.
So you're finding a way to break that cycle.
Exactly. Stress levels have a big impact on obviously all areas of our lives. With fertility, it actually changes the timing of when your fertility window is, strangely enough. And a lot of my clients are, or some of my clients have been high-powered business people, and after just a couple of treatments, and we've picked up their adrenals through the treatment, they've actually fallen pregnant very, very quickly because they're starting to realise and acknowledge that stress.
Wow. So let's talk more specifically about fertility then. So there's people out there listening that have issues with fertility, and I'd make an assumption we're talking more towards women than men.
It's both, actually.
Okay.
But yes, majority of
okay.
women.
Well, let's look at men and women. But if there's people out there that are struggling to conceive, struggling with fertility, obviously you've been through it and you can appreciate how stressful and emotional that roller coaster must be. In what ways specifically can reflexology just get people moving in the right direction?
As I said, it's a balancing treatment. So mm-hmm. it's going to help people to balance their, as you said, insulin levels, cortisol levels, stress levels. It's a very relaxing treatment.
I can imagine having your feet touched.
Generally, any touch is most beneficial. People don't realise how relaxing it is. After a treatment, people will walk away from my house where I work, walking on air, because it does really lighten the load, if you like.
And touching someone's feet is not the same as tickling them, isn't it?
No.
I can imagine that most people are quite sensitive with their feet.
They can be, but reflexology is a firm pressure.
Yeah.
It's a firm, positive movement that's doing something specific.
So if somebody is ticklish, that's not going to be an issue.
Generally not an issue.
No.
Generally not an issue.
They just need to relax.
Yes. Well, you will pretty much instantly after people start working on your feet.
Okay. Well, let's talk a bit more about real-life scenarios. Obviously, we can't mention people by name specifically unless they've given you permission to. But can you give me some examples of some people, some clients that you've worked with and how it's really helped them? Maybe, you know, a non-fertility example or maybe a fertility example?
Thank you. Well, one of the treatments I used to do when I was very early trained was on an elderly lady that had severe arthritis. She was on very high doses of painkillers, hadn't slept properly for months. And I did a half an hour treatment on her, and she got up out of the chair, walked up three steps, walked down three steps in no pain whatsoever, and was able to then sleep for 5-6 days without any sleeping tablets or painkillers. She was absolutely gobsmacked.
Wow.
And I did then continue, obviously, to work with her. And I actually started treating her sister as well, who's having similar problems. So, and it works on an ongoing basis. Reflexology is accumulative. So the more you have, the longer the effects will last.
Okay. And is it a case of once you've dealt with it, it stays away permanently, or is it an ongoing process?
Sometimes it's an ongoing process. Depends on what it is. And different people come to me for different reasons. Obviously, if they're treating a specific problem, they'll come to me for 4 to 6 weeks, sort out that problem,
mm-hmm.
and then I won't see them again until they have another problem.
Okay.
But reflexology also works on a preventative basis. So some people come and see me on a once a month, once every 6 weeks, just to keep their bodies in tip-top condition and to help them relax and deal with their life stresses.
Okay. And can you give an example on the fertility side?
Well, I'm very, very lucky and very honoured to have actually worked on my nephew's wife, who was, they were struggling, just about to go down the gynecological route. And I worked on her for a while. And she, I think it was after about 6 or 8 weeks, she fell pregnant and announced it on Mother's Day, which was awesome. And she's now pregnant with her second. And again, I worked with her for about 3 months. They'd been trying, obviously without my help, for about 6 to 8 months, and mm-hmm. nothing was happening. So she came and saw me again, and it worked. So baby's due in August.
And for those people that do conceive easily, I'm sure they have no appreciation of just how difficult and frustrated it must be to be in that position where, often IVF treatment can be quite expensive, as I understand.
Yeah.
But you're going through that cycle of stress, that emotional roller coaster every single month.
Yeah. Yeah.
It must be incredibly hard. I think it's a fantastic thing that you're doing. So tell me more about your plans for the coming year. Obviously, we are partway through 2019 now, but where does the rest of this year take you and into 2020?
Well, obviously, hopefully more babies, more okay. pregnancies,
yep.
Raising awareness of what actually reflexology can do for people that are struggling. I'm generally the last resort alongside the IVF. And if I can get to people earlier,
mm-hmm.
Hopefully, I can't guarantee it, but obviously it will go some way to actually helping these people perhaps save thousands of pounds if they do go through that IVF process.
And I think raising that awareness is really important because I've heard of reflexology. I'm not an expert by any means. But I hadn't associated fertility issues with reflexology. And yeah. I think just getting the word out there that...
Absolutely. You know, it works on all sorts of different things, or it's potentially able to work on all sorts of different things. But over the years, I have found, obviously, fertility, because of my background and my experience and some of the people that I was working on before I was specialising, it worked.
Mm-hmm.
It just does.
Yeah, absolutely. And I hear you've been put forward for an award.
Yes, I have.
tell us more about that.
Yes, I was nominated for the Kent Health and Beauty Awards, and I am actually a finalist in a couple of the categories, which I am absolutely thrilled about, which again is going some way to boost the knowledge of reflexology and what it can do for people.
You know, if you can raise your profile and get the word out there, exactly. It can only help the cause, can't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. It also boosts reflexology in itself. I'm the area group leader for all the local reflexologists. And okay. as the AOR, which is the association, we have a week at the end of September as a World Reflexology Week to actually help raise awareness mm-hmm. of reflexology and what it can do for people.
I think the next step for you should be to write a book. I can see that coming. You'd be surprised the power of writing the book, eh?
Yeah, maybe.
Right, okay. So just to reiterate, who are you specifically looking for? I know you can help most people with most things, but who for those people out there listening today, who are you looking for in particular to come and just have a chat with you and see if you can help them?
Well, basically, anyone that's been struggling for more than 3 years or are thinking about getting pregnant, mm-hmm. not sure that it's going to be an easy job. So, as I said before, coming to me early, those people that are very stressed with the jobs that they do. So anyone that wants to start a family.
Simple as that.
Simple as that.
Wow. And to realise that there is scope outside of the medical profession to help
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely.
The medical profession do an amazing job under quite a difficult circumstance. Sometimes we've limited resources, but often people think that that's the only option that they have to go to. And I think it's raising that awareness that there are options outside
Absolutely.
Of the traditional, just going to your doctor and going down that route. You can look at holistic services as well to actually get the same, if not better, results sometimes.
Absolutely. With me, you have the time.
Yeah.
You spend an hour with me and just do what you need to do. You talk, you sleep, you listen to me rant on if you want to. Entirely up to you within that time for you, which mm-hmm. is also very important.
So how do you work? Do you take phone calls? Do you do initial sort of chats over the phone?
I offer initially a 15-minute consultation over the phone
okay.
just to get an idea of what's going on with mm-hmm. them. And obviously they get to hear about me and we see if we click, because obviously not every therapist will work with every single person.
Mm.
We are all individuals. So, so I offer a 15-minute consultation.
Yep.
And then if you decide that you would like to come ahead, go ahead and have treatments, you contact me and we book times in for when people want to come and see me.
Excellent. So if there's listeners out there that think, yep, definitely need to have a chat with Jen, what's the best way that people can get in contact with
you?
Well,
they can contact me on my mobile, mm-hmm. on my email, which is jennifer@soulfertility.com.
Mm-hmm.
And on my website, there is actually a downloadable file, which gives a little bit more information, perhaps something that they don't already know, mm-hmm. but there might be a snippet of information there, which they can download and then contact me, or as an inquiry form where they can email me from that. And that's www.soulfertility.com.
Super. And I'll do some post promotion after the show on social media, and I'll put your website details up on the on Facebook, LinkedIn, and also on Twitter too. But thank you, Jen. Thank you so much for coming on the show this morning. It's been really interesting to find out more about what you do.
Thank you so much. It's been really, really lovely.
Brilliant. So after the break, we are going to talk about water and the importance of staying hydrated. But to take us there, we have a song, a classic from Spandau Ballet.
Funny how it seems, always in time, but never in line for dreams. Head over heels, went toe to toe. This is the sound.
Spandau Ballet and True from, I think, 1983. How fast time flies. You're listening to the Health Matters Radio Show with me, Neil De Silva. A quick reminder of the show's social media feeds on Twitter. It's at Health Radio Show. On Facebook, search the Health Matters Radio Show and you can follow the show's Facebook page and you can like it and get lots of regular updates. You can also listen again to this show and all previous shows on the show's iTunes podcast. So if you go to iTunes and you can subscribe as well, go to iTunes and search the Health Matters Radio Show. You can find the show's podcast feed and also on the media page of my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. Okay, so we're going to wrap the show up in about 7 or 8 minutes, but for the next 7 or 8 minutes, I'm going to talk to you about water. Okay, so we all know how important water is. We can live for weeks, maybe months in some cases, without food. I think the world record goes back to 1973, where someone fasted for medical reasons, but they fasted for 382 days. So in 382 days without food, but we can only last a matter of days, maybe a week or two, without water. So water is critical to our health. And yet, despite that, many people fail to consume the recommended levels of fluid every day. And in fact, when I take on a new client, one of the things I measure is their hydration levels. And I can say pretty much without exception, maybe one or two cases, but pretty much without exception, everyone I meet for the first time is dehydrated in some way or other. In fact, some people are so dehydrated that the only reason they're still alive is that the body has had to make adjustments over maybe months, maybe years. But if they'd gone to that level of dehydration within, say, a week, they'd probably be dead. It's that serious. But the body is massively adaptive in keeping you alive, but that doesn't mean that you should neglect your levels of hydration. And hydration is more than just quenching your thirst. All the cells in your body and all your organs need water. Water is used to lubricate our joints. It protects the spinal cord and also other sensitive tissues. Water helps to regulate body temperature, and it massively helps our digestion as well. Now, some people will argue that you can get hydration and water through our food, and that is absolutely correct. There's lots of fruits and vegetables out there that are high in water, things like watermelon, obviously, tomatoes, oranges, citrus fruits, apples. They all have some level of water in them, but we do need to supplement with actual fluids to keep our water levels to where they should be. Because we do lose water every day. We lose water through urination, of course, and through sweating, but we also lose water through our breath. So we need to make sure that we are drinking enough water to replace the water that we're losing. If over time we are losing more than we're replacing, that can lead on to health issues, as I will cover in a moment. So what do we need to do? We need to look at how much water we drink, whether it's from a tap or a bottle. There are obviously environmental issues with plastics, which is a whole different issue. But really, water is the best source of fluid for the body. It's what the human body was designed for. There's no sugar, there's no calories in water, and it's a readily available source of hydration to our body. We can drink things like milk, but you know, milk comes with calories, milk comes with sugar. And not all milk is of the same quality. We can then switch to other beverages, but they will generally contain things like alcohol or caffeine. And then we've got things like soft drinks, so that they'll have sugar in them, or they'll have artificial sweeteners. And then obviously with beer, we'll have alcohol. So these other drinks contain empty calories, particularly if you're trying to lose weight. That's not the smartest thing to do, but it's not good for your health anyway. If you're drinking lots of fizzy drinks just to maintain your hydration levels, then perhaps switching to just good old water would do your health a favour. So how much water should you drink? Well, this has been the subject of debates over the years. I have a personal opinion, which I will express in the moment. But a lot of the recommended amounts of water that we should be drinking can depend on things like activity levels, how much we sweat. It can also depend on your sex and your age as well. So there's no universally agreed amount of water that fits the bill. But generally speaking, and this is in my personal opinion, a good adequate water intake for most people in most situations, particularly in the UK, where it's not particularly hot, we don't sweat a huge amount because of high temperatures. My personal opinion is around 2.5 to 3 litres of water a day is a good target to aim for. And actually, if you get in the habit of doing it, it's incredibly easy to do. You know, if you drink a pint when you wake up, a pint when you go to bed, then all you've got to do is get another couple of litres in during the day. And that is actually quite an easy thing to do when you get in the habit. And then when you get in the habit, your body will crave that water. And actually, if you don't drink as much as you do normally, then you can really miss it. Now, there are some health issues for not being properly hydrated. Has a massive impact on the kidneys. Now, your kidneys filter out around 20 litres of fluid every single day, and water is absolutely essential for the kidneys to function properly. If the kidneys don't function properly, then waste products can build up, and also excess fluid can build up inside the body. That can lead on to things like chronic kidney disease, which can lead on to things like kidney failure, and then obviously that can lead on to, in the more serious cases, things like dialysis or kidney transplantation. But also, UTIs are the second most common type of infection in the body. So if you're not drinking enough fluids, you're not going to the toilet enough, you're not flushing out the bacteria that can live in the urethra, and actually that can lead on to UTIs. So by increasing your fluid intake, of course you will go to the toilet more, but that's not a bad thing, and that can actually help keep UTIs to a minimum. But if you do get a UTI and it spreads up the urinary tract, that can really affect the kidneys, and that can cause permanent damage to the kidneys, which can lead on to some serious kidney infections and also septicemia as well. So drinking plenty of water is one of the simplest ways to reduce the risk of developing UTIs. And actually, for most people, if they've got a UTI already, increasing their water intake can help to solve the problem as well. Also, kidney stones, the leading cause of kidney stones is lack of water. Kidney stones are quite commonly reported in people who don't drink enough water during the day. And it also has a massive effect on your electrolyte balance. So when you're dehydrated, so you're actually using and losing more water than you're taking in, that can lead to an imbalance in things like potassium, phosphate and sodium. And these electrolytes help carry signals between cells. So when your kidneys are unable to maintain that balance of electrolytes in the body, those electrical signals can become mixed up. And that can lead on to things like seizures and also involuntary muscle movements where the body's signals are just getting completely confused. And in serious cases, that can lead on to lack of consciousness. And it can also lead on to things like damage to the nervous system, heart failure, and it can have a massive impact on your immune system too. So, and just some other effects on other parts of the body. Your blood is 90% water. So if water's in short supply, the blood gets thicker, your blood pressure increases. If you're dehydrated, your airways can become restricted as the body makes efforts to minimize the loss of water through your breath. So that can make asthma and allergies worse. Dehydration can affect the brain, so that can have an impact on your thinking ability. And dehydration is the leading cause of headaches as well. It can affect your skin. It can lead to premature aging, premature wrinkling, and also skin disorders if you're dehydrated. And as I mentioned at the start, your bowel needs a huge amount of water to do its job properly. If you're dehydrated, you can get chronically constipated, which can lead on to some pretty serious issues as well. But also, if you're dehydrated, you can have an overly acidic stomach, and that can make heartburn more common, which can lead on to things like stomach ulcers as well. And if you've got joint pain, well, in cartilage, there's a lot of water. So in the joints of the body and the discs of the spine, they are about 80% water. And if you're dehydrated, these joints become less good at absorbing shocks, which can lead on to joint pain as well. So water is more than just simply quenching your thirst. There are so many systems of the body that depend on the right amount of hydration. So make sure that if you're drinking lots of teas and coffees or perhaps alcohol or fizzy drinks, that maybe you switch across to drinking good old water. And if you start drinking more water on a regular basis, you will probably see an improvement in your health. Well, that's it for today. I'd like to thank you for listening. I'd like to thank Jen again for coming on the show.
Thank you.
And I will put Jen's details on the show's social media feeds. After the break, we have the Channel Radio News and Weather. But if you'd like to come on the show as Jen has done today and talk about what you do and your background and how you can help people, then please contact me via my website. And it will be great to have you on the show as a guest on a future show. If you have any questions for me, then please drop me a tweet via Twitter or drop me an email if you've got a personal issue you'd like to talk about that I might be able to help you with. So until the same time next week, I'd like to say thank you for listening again. Have a great week. Stay happy, stay healthy, and I will catch you at the same time next Monday.
Is a blue shoots up through the stony ground. There's no room, no space to rent in this town. You're out of luck, and the reason that you had to care, the traffic is stuck.